We are Radio Catskill.
Live from the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, it's Friday, and Dan Hoost is here from Sullivan County Government. The legislature was back in session, and he'll have a report from Monticello. Plus, Manor Inc. is the youth-driven, community-supported monthly newspaper. In their October issue, they're tackling the upcoming election, and they found surprising results about what high schoolers are concerned about. You'll be surprised, too. PennDOT is seeking safety input from a young demographic of drivers. Our youngest reporter, intern Nia Watson, has the story. And culture reporter Valerie Manzi profiles The Artery in Milford, an artist's cooperative, with an exhibit opening tomorrow. Plus the Thurman Barker Quintet, celebrating the music of Benny Golson and Art Blakey in a rare special performance. Plus, pie! 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 First the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Kristen Wright. The full scope of the loss in Florida from Hurricane Milton is still coming to light. The water is still rising and nearly 3 million people are still in the dark. Milton made landfall as a Category 3 storm late Wednesday in Siesta Key, about 70 miles south of Tampa. At least 8 people died, some from tornadoes. NPR's Greg Allen reports on the start to the long recovery.
Along with high winds, a storm surge, and deadly tornadoes, Milton dumped torrential rain as across the Florida peninsula. A number of rivers across the state are rising and are expected to flood in coming days. As much as 19 inches of rain fell in the St. Petersburg area. In one neighborhood there, Melissa Anderson spent the day using towels, blankets, even T-shirts to stop it from coming in.
Water was just coming into the bottom of the house. Faithfully just kept coming and coming and coming until we couldn't stop it anymore. The whole bottom floor, yeah.
Like other people in the neighborhood, Anderson's house is not in a flood zone, and she doesn't have flood insurance. Greg Allen, NPR News, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Former President Donald Trump is holding an event in Aurora, Colorado today. He's expected to focus on immigration. City leaders have rejected statements made by the former president and others about Venezuelan gang activity in the Denver suburb. Trump spoke at the Economic Club of Detroit yesterday. He offered plans to revitalize the auto industry. He also made this statement.
You want to know the truth? It'll be like Detroit. Our whole country will end up being like Detroit if she's your president.
Vice President Harris is campaigning for a second straight day in Arizona. She'll be in Scottsdale. The state began early voting yesterday. Harris participated in a town hall hosted by Univision last night in Las Vegas. Stocks opened mixed this morning as the Labor Department reported a slowdown in wholesale inflation. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow jumped about 170 points in early trading.
Wholesale prices were flat last month as falling goods prices offset the rising price of services. Over the last 12 months, wholesale prices have risen by 1.8%. That's a smaller annual increase than the month before and offers further evidence that inflation is cooling down. J.P. Morgan's profit slipped last quarter, but the bank still outperformed expectations. J.P. Morgan set aside more than $3 billion to cover future loan losses, including potential defaults by its credit card customers. Asian stocks were mixed overnight, up in Tokyo but down in Shanghai. South Korea's central bank lowered its benchmark interest rate for the first time in 4 years. Scott Horsley, NPR News.
Tesla revealed a prototype of its robo-taxi in Hollywood yesterday. The cybercab features butterfly doors and no steering wheel. CEO Elon Musk says Tesla will start building the autonomous vehicles by 2026. You're listening to NPR News from Washington. The United Nations peacekeeping force in southern Lebanon says explosives hit its headquarters today. At least 4 peacekeepers have been hurt in recent attacks there. The Israeli military says it was targeting Hezbollah fighters near the base. This a day after Israeli airstrikes in central Beirut killed at least 22 people in residential neighborhoods. According to Lebanon's public health ministry, the attack was the deadliest on central Beirut since the war between Israel and Hamas started a year ago. The 2024 Nobel Peace Prize has gone to a Japanese organization. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports.
Nobel Committee Chair Jorgen Watne Friedness said anti-nuclear group Nihon Hidankyo has helped make the nuclear option taboo for nearly 80 years.
These
historical witnesses have helped to generate widespread opposition to nuclear weapons around the world by drawing on personal stories.
But he said the nuclear taboo is being pressured by nations who want nuclear weapons or who have threatened to use them in current wars, a clear reference to Iran, North Korea, and Russia.
When we look at the conflicts around the world, we see how crucial it is to uphold a nuclear taboo.
120,000 were killed in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, said Friedness, but modern nuclear weapons would kill millions. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Paris.
The grassroots group founded in 1956 is made up of survivors of the nuclear bombs dropped by the U.S. on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945. I'm Kristen Wright, and this is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lemelson Foundation, working to harness the power of invention and innovation to accelerate climate action and improve lives around the world. Learn more at lemelson.org. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's Friday, and we normally hear from Dan Hoost on Fridays about what's going on in Monticello from Sullivan County Government. We will still do that, but today's a special Friday because it's the Friday before Apple Pie Palooza tomorrow, and we just got a delivery of fresh baked pies from Delaware Valley Job Corps, and we got two of the bakers here. Elisa Vivero and Sophia Sai Christian. And also, we've got Sean Bailey, their advisor. Hi, guys. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for baking for us.
Hey, hello. Thanks for having us.
You guys are in the Culinary Arts Program at Delaware Valley Job Corps, and you brought us pies, donated pies to us, that we're going to sell tomorrow at Catskill Brewery. How long did it take you to bake these pies?
It took us about a couple of hours with prepping of the dough, and then the actual sauteing of the apples and adding the nutmeg, the cinnamon. So, you know, a couple of hours with the help of the other bakers and with the help of our instructor, we were able to crack it out in a good amount of time.
You did, and you got a lot of them, Elisa.
Our instructor, Jeffrey Whitlock.
Shout out to Jeffrey. This is part, you guys are in the Culinary Arts Program. So what kinds of things are you learning there in that program at Delaware Valley Job Corps?
This is an introduction to culinary arts. This program could get you certifications like the food handler certification, Golden Hotel Tourism, and I forgot.
Oh, there's more, I'm sure.
Yeah, Sean, there is more.
Sean, well, tell folks about like the program and what Delaware Valley Job Corps is, if in case they're not familiar with it. We know what great work you guys do there with students.
Sure. So Delaware Valley Job Corps is part of the Job Corps program, which is 120 centers across the country. It is the largest federally funded training program for young people, 16 to 24 years old. We're constantly looking for both students and staff. So I'm going to give a quick phone number if that's okay.
Do it.
845-887-9025. That puts you through to our Welcome Center, and they will direct you wherever you need to go. So you can call for anything. But it's a great program. I've been there 26 years, and in that amount of time, I've seen lots of students who've ended up doing really great things. They come in, they get all the training that they need for really good jobs. And we also help them to get their diplomas if they need that. So it's a fantastic program.
Sophia, Elisa, are you guys hoping to go on to like a career in the food industry as a chef, owning your restaurants? What are you thinking this might help you do?
I definitely. So previous to my experience here at Job Corps, I was working as a counselor in Vermont at a camp, and they had like a farming area. Oh, they had a farming area. Alongside the campsite where they were growing their own organic vegetables. They had their chickens and goats and stuff that they would, you know, process on the farm. So for me, I would want to grow my own farm and be able to produce in my community in a way where people could get organic food and vegetable for a very low cost in the grocery store.
That's awesome. And there's so many great farmers in the community in Calicoon and Sullivan County and the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania. Elisa, what do you hope to be doing with this?
I was hoping for a business in the future, somewhere around like a cafe, including cats, Because I have
a cat cafe.
Yes, I love cat cafes. I love cats in general. I had this plan since 16. I was basically wanted to have people to come in and see cats and enjoy like a dessert that looks like a cat.
I love yes. it.
I was thinking Chinese restaurant when you first said cat cafe. I'm sorry, but
I don't even know what you're saying. So thank you, Sean, for cutting your mic. Thank you guys for coming in. And yes, we'll take both organic produce and farming and a cat cafe. Thank you guys for baking for Apple Pie Palooza. You heard what the great ingredients were in there, and you can taste them tomorrow at the Catskill Brewery, 3 to 6. And supporting Radio Catskill. Again, thank you guys for donating and baking the pies, and good luck in your future endeavors. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.
All right. We're going to shimmy over here and get Dan Hoost into the chair. He is the Sullivan County Director of Communications. But let these guys get out. We'll take a quick break and be right back. This is Radio Catskill.
Donna Fellenberg here, and on Catskill Character this week, my guest is Doug Ray of Narrowsburg, New York. Doug and I will be speaking about perseverance, learning to overcome obstacles put in your way, and learning to overcome the obstacles you put in your own way. Doug has many stories to tell, including falling off a glacial mountain and living to tell the tale. That's Catskill Character, 10:30 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Back to our normally scheduled programming, Dan Hoost, who is the communications director from Sullivan County Government, is here every Friday. Thank you for allowing a little bit of time for the Delaware Valley Job Corps Bakers.
Oh, it's one of our secret hidden gems that shouldn't be as secret as it is. I've known about Job Corps for much of my entire life because I knew people who worked there. I worked in Calicoon. It is an extraordinary resource that we have right in our backyard. Used to be much more oriented to young people from the New York City area, and it still caters to that, but has really expanded lately to help out our local young folks as well. It is a wonderful place. If you don't know anything about it, just go online and take a look at what Job Corps does in general. We are privileged and proud to have them in Sullivan County.
And if you've been in Calicoon or coming into Calicoon, you see that big building on the hill. It's a former seminary. That's where they're located, and they do great work with all the students there. And we appreciate them donating their pies for Apple Pie Palooza.
I was getting hungry just listening to it.
Keep your hands off. Yeah. Keep your hands off. All right, let's talk about what's going on at the legislature. They were off for a few weeks and now back in session yesterday. A hearing on the proposed local law designating affordable housing as a Sullivan County public purpose. What does that mean?
Really, it means exactly what it says it means. It's not tied to any particular project or initiative. One day it will be. But it's something evidently we need to have to be able to be eligible for certain funding that in regards to affordable housing. And the public hearing, of course, had a few people speak, but it was really about the need that we have for more affordable housing in Sullivan County and what role government can play in that. This is not to become some sort of dictatorial regime over landlords or developers. This is to work hand in hand with them to make it more affordable, because as one of our legislators who builds housing himself, Joe Perello, said, it's very expensive to build housing. And that's why, in some respects, you don't see a lot of affordable housing, because the developers, of course, are looking to make some money. So where can government step in maybe and help bridge that gap where we have them building housing that otherwise would not be profitable for developers to build, but fills that extreme need that we have in Sullivan County for young families and people who are just looking for places to rent, who are crucial to our economy because they're starting out in their careers in Sullivan County.
Also, some presentations and meetings with the first responders, the Sheriff's Department drone team met with local firefighters. What was that all about? Drone team.
Yes. And it's expanded very quickly. Just a few years ago, I went out on assignment with their very first drone pilot that they had at the Sheriff's Office. That's now expanded to 6. I have been heading out with them, like taking images of our parks and things, because they don't just do it for law enforcement. And that was what they wanted to show the firefighters too, is this team is available to help at fire scenes or search and rescues. And it's paid for already by taxpayer dollars. We're not going to charge, the sheriff's office is not going to charge you anything extra to utilize their services. And if you have that right there available, why go to the expense and bother of getting a drone and certifying a pilot in your own department when the sheriff's office has a team of six that they'd be happy. In fact, they get excited about these things to come out and assist at the scene. Even if it's like with me, just doing what I sort of thought was boring footage of our parks from above. Because, you know, it's more interesting like a search and rescue. But these guys live for these opportunities. So it's wonderful to see that.
Also, NYSA demonstrating the power of live wires to first responders. With all the news about the hurricanes in the news lately, this is a timely topic for folks to remember.
And also, last year we had a highway worker who was out in a rainstorm and got electrocuted by live wires, nearly passed, survived it. But it was one of those things where it struck us, pardon the pun on that one, that we needed to provide this kind of training and understanding, not just to our highway workers, but to our first responders as well, because some of it is not intuitive. And I know some of what they saw was truly horrifying. Like they showed a boot, just a standard utility boot, that got caught on fire when it touched the live wires. So it's not just about the shock part of it. There's also fire and burns involved. So NYSIG, we thank them for doing this. They have this cool trailer that comes and shows this in a safe way. And we had about 100 between our first responders, public works employees, about 100 people who learned some valuable lessons.
We're talking to Dan Hoost. He is the communications director for Sullivan County Government. Yesterday, also, the clothesline project was presented by Fearless Hudson Valley. Tell us about the clothesline project.
Yeah, it's always one of the toughest days of the year for me because I'm all about taking photos of this and publicizing the awareness of domestic violence. But I know three of the people who are listed on these T-shirts that were put around the lobby of the government center in memory of them being murdered by their significant others due to domestic violence situations. These mostly young women were in really awful situations, and we want to be there for the ones who have survived and the ones who are yet to endure this kind of domestic violence, and also try to put an awareness to the general public that this is happening right in your backyard. And we want to prevent further stories like I used to have to write as a reporter about these people dying at the hands of somebody who's supposed to be their intimate partner. Fearless Hudson Valley was the one that put this on. They're a vendor with us for domestic violence. And they also have a helpline that is available 24/7 regarding domestic violence. It's 845-562-5340. That's 845-562-5340.
All right. And also some recognitions for folks in the government agencies. The Veteran Service Agency Director, Stephen Walsh, honored by local vets for his leadership.
Yes, I'm going to post something on social media today about this. Stephen Walsh, if you haven't met him, even if you're not a veteran, you should, because he is the director of our Veteran Service Agency, is, of course, a veteran himself. He's a biker, and he's just this wonderful, warm, funny person that has such a huge heart for the community. He's not just involved in veterans' activities, but of course that takes up a lot of his time. And we are so fortunate and lucky to have him, and the Sullivan County Veterans Coalition and the veterans in the county just wanted to say thank you to him. They gave him this wonderful plaque yesterday in legislature.
And Planning Director Heather Jaxie got an award, too.
Yes, she had gotten one from the Upper Delaware Council, but she was unable to accept it. She was away at the time. In fact, no one from our Planning Division could make the dinner that the UDC had a few weeks ago. So our legislator, Kat Scott, who had been to the dinner and gotten the plaque, gave it to Heather Jaxie yesterday for all her work. She's our Director of Planning for years of work, stretching back over a decade, because I remember writing about this in the newspaper, to improve the public access to the Delaware River in Long Eddy, which is a beautiful spot now.
And also, there's a contest for parks, speaking about some of the parks that are in our area. And what is this contest and what do folks need to do?
Yes, our Parks and Recreation Department came up with this great idea of doing a photo exhibition showcasing the photos of our landscapes and wildlife at our parks and museums. These are county parks and museums. We've got the D&H Canal Interpretive Center, Linear Park in Summitville, the Fort Delaware Museum of Colonial History in Narrowsburg, Lake Superior in Bethel, Livingston Manor Covered Bridge, Minisink Battleground Park in Berryville, Stone Arch Bridge in Canoosa Lake, and our county museum in Hurleyville. In the case of museums, these can be indoor pictures as well. But we are going to accept submissions through December 31st, and you can submit up to 3 pieces. It'll be a juried exhibit. We will have judges for this, and then the winners are going to be displayed in the Government Center and at the County Museum next spring. More information about that is available on the county website and also on our social media. You have to sign up and then submit.
Also, there's a donation of property to expand the D&H Canal Park.
Yeah, about 7 acres next to the Canal Interpretive Center down in Summitville that we can only pay up to appraised value, and the property was being listed for about $15,000 beyond appraised value, and we really wanted it because it was going to make a great addition to our linear park, and the seller was interested in selling it to us, but they weren't going to go any less than where they were. Well, Open Space Institute stepped in, said, we got a private donor who's willing to give you that $15,000 to complete the sale. So we are going to purchase that soon and add that to the park. And what a wonderful partnership that is.
And there's some rail trail plans coming up next week, presenting some information on the expansion of that.
Yeah, Open Space Institute right. is going to be doing I think it's coming up, is it Wednesday, I think?
The 16th, the 16th.
In Wurtsboro.
Right.
So, and that's about their entire plans for the rail trail from Kingston Town to Port Jervis, because the main line of the O&W, the Ontario and Western Railway, ran through the town of Mamikating and then continued up into Summitville. But there were spur branches to the north to Kingston and to the south through Wurtsboro to Port Jervis, some of which are already trails. I've hiked some of them. They are gorgeous. They are flat. They are in beautiful areas. And Open Space Institute and we are interested in developing those further.
And more park news. There's a park survey.
Yes.
We're looking for input on we have a lot of great
yes.
parks.
It ends Monday. Well, this part is the one that I think everyone should be involved in. We want as much feedback as possible. This is about all our parks. The survey is going to ask you about our parks. What do you like? What do you not like? Have you used it? Have you not used it? What do you think we should have there? What don't you want us to have there? And this is going to be incorporated into our master plan that we will release next year that will guide development for many years to come at our parks. So this is a crucial opportunity to weigh in on that. You can find more information at our parks page on our website, sullivanny.us, or, as we are transitioning to now, sullivanny.gov, G-O-V, which is now working.
Okay. And then last but not least, reminder, it's Fire Prevention Week. Check those smoke alarms.
Yes. I had to do this myself this week because when I saw that, I was like, you know what? I have not checked the batteries in my alarms. And wouldn't you know it, batteries were dead. And that was a bit of a scary realization. So test those batteries out. And frankly, if you can't remember like me when you last replaced them, replace the batteries in the smoke alarms.
Or if you're like me, you took out the battery when it was going off while you were burning something oh, and forgot to put it back.
No.
Oh, dear. Dan Hoost is the Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. He joins us every Friday. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend, a long weekend.
My pleasure. Yeah, we'll be closed Monday.
We'll take a break. And when we come back, the surprising results of a survey of high school students from Manor Inc. about what they're most concerned about heading into this year's election. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Jeff Works Office Solutions, located right on Main Street in Jeffersonville, New York. A newly renovated pet-friendly office space that rents by the day, week, or month, with hot desks, sound-insulated rooms, Wi-Fi, modern amenities, and 24-hour secure access. Online at jeffworksjville.com. And from The Cooperage Project, thecooperageproject.org. And listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
Don't miss Radio Catskill's Apple Pie Palooza. We'll have so many apple pies and, oh my goodness, can you smell that? Cinnamon.
Oh, gosh, that buttery, flaky crust.
Susan?
Golden filling.
You want to try it again?
No, I've got to like dip into this pie.
Oh, no, that pie's for the sale.
This is like unbelievable.
There's plenty of pie for everyone at Apple Pie Palooza, 3 to 6 tomorrow at Catskill Brewery, Livingston Manor.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Manor Inc. is the youth-driven, award-winning, community-supported newspaper. And in their current issue, they're tackling election 2024 with a guide to the candidates for local offices and also how voting machines deter voter alteration and a lot of other topics. They also quizzed their local students, 139 Livingston Manor and Roscoe students, about what they think are the most pressing concerns in the upcoming election. And the results might surprise you. They certainly surprise Editor-in-Chief Zoe McGee.
On page 6, we did a survey with the students at LMCS and RCS to see what they think is the most important issues that should be focused on with the election.
And what were those top issues for the folks who participated?
Surprisingly, we were actually very surprised on this. The top concern was inflation, which we're definitely not expecting with the students. And the second is not so surprising is college costs, which makes sense. They're all students and trying to figure out how to go to college.
And then followed closely by housing costs. Why do you think inflation topped this poll of these high school students in Livingston Manor and Roscoe?
Because not only doesn't it affect adults, but it's also going to affect students by kind of just everything with grocery costs and gas prices. You know, some students are driving. So really, it kind of affects everybody. And I think they noticed that through seeing the adults around them struggling to pay certain things because of inflation. And I think they realized what a big issue it is because of that.
I know you didn't actually cover this as a story, but just in your day-to-day and your position as editor-in-chief, are you finding that folks are engaged by this election? Are they enthused? Is there some participation?
Oh, definitely. There's so much involvement in the election, and everybody's really seems like uptight about it. It's a big life-changing election. So
this issue of Manor Inc. is heavy on election coverage. How did you go about getting this coverage together?
We had to schedule a lot of interviews, which was a bit difficult because obviously all these people, they're talking with a lot of people about the election, and they just have so much going on. It was hard to schedule time with them, but we're really happy that they were able to make time for us.
Zoe McGee is the editor-in-chief of Manor Inc. That is the youth-driven, award-winning, community-supported newspaper. And you can find the current October issue with a lot of election coverage and more on newsstands now. It's also online at manorinc.org. Zoe, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Radio Chatskill. PennDOT is talking to teens, too. The most common mode of transportation in the United States is driving. And according to the CDC, car accidents result in about 100 fatalities a day at the national level. Those who forgo using a seatbelt in passenger vehicles face an even greater risk than those who buckle up. The Pennsylvania Department of Transportation is working on solutions to those issues and that issue, and they are seeking input from the youngest demographic of drivers, high school students. Our newest reporter, Radio Catskill's Nia Watson, reports.
The Pennsylvania Department of Transportation 8th Annual Innovations Challenge is open. It encourages high school students to create possible solutions to roadway fatalities and spread awareness on driver and passenger safety. I'm here with Jessica Ruddy and Liz Fabry from the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, also known as PennDOT, to learn more about the competition. Can you both please introduce yourselves and share a bit about what you do for the Department of Transportation?
Sure. My name is Jessica Ruddy. I am the Community Relations Coordinator for PennDOT District 4, which encompasses Lackawanna, Luzerne, Pike, Susquehanna, Wayne, and Wyoming counties in Northeast Pennsylvania.
I am Liz Fabry. I am the Safety Press Officer, so I work alongside Jessica notifying the public of anything, and I also am always involved in community events and safety education throughout District 4.
Thank you. And Jessica, can you please describe the Innovations Challenge for our listeners?
Sure. Every year, PennDOT hosts the Innovations Challenge. What the Innovations Challenge is we propose a problem, an issue that PennDOT is facing with whether it's motorists, truck drivers, roadways, engineering. And we give this issue to the high school students in order to come up with an innovative solution. So it would be a cost-effective, safe driving kind of initiative that we are looking to find a solution for. This year, it is based on safety. We are looking for an innovative, cost-effective way to increase the amount of people using seatbelts. What we found is that on average, more than 350 unrestrained fatalities occur on Pennsylvania roadways each year. So PennDOT is very committed to improving roadway safety and deploys a multifaceted strategy, which includes promoting behavioral programs and implementing infrastructure improvements. However, the number of unrestrained fatalities remains high, and changing driver and passenger behavior is crucial to us solving this issue. So we're looking for high school students to tell us what they think would help to encourage more people to use their seatbelt.
Can you tell me why changing one's behavior, specifically regarding seatbelt use, is such a difficult problem to solve? And how can new ideas from students be the breakthrough needed to solve this problem?
Right. So using a seatbelt is definitely a personal decision. I cannot be in everybody's car telling them to wear seatbelts. So we are looking for ways for people and students, and probably from a very young age, to change their behavior or to start the behavior of wearing your seatbelt to reduce fatality.
Let's talk more about the seatbelt safety aspect. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, in 2022, about 50% of passenger vehicle casualties were not wearing seatbelts. So Liz, could you tell me about the real-world impact of student innovation on public safety, specifically regarding seatbelts?
Our high school students that we're asking to give some innovation and to give some new ideas are actually going to be the new drivers on the road. So they'll really be able to make that change by giving their new ideas. It might be something we've never heard before, and maybe it'll spark some change within their community. In 2023, there was 92% of fatalities could have been prevented if people were wearing their seatbelts. So that's a huge number. And now that we will be having all these new teen drivers, I think having some sort of new ideas coming from them would be great. The more we say it, the more we do it, it's that learned behavior, and it's more likely someone's going to make a safe decision.
All right. And Jessica, can you tell us about the guidelines for this challenge and the awards?
Sure. The guidelines for the challenge are students must work together in teams, 2 to 4 individuals, to develop their innovative solution that addresses the identified challenge, which is seatbelt safety and increasing seatbelt usage. The submissions are to be no more than 750 words. The team would then present it to our district. For example, for District 4, each district will have the high schools participate and to present their submission. And then we then choose a winner and pass it along down to Harrisburg, where they then have a team that will judge and award whoever they feel has the best idea. And the best part about this is there is actually a cash reward. There are cash rewards for the different places. So they total $6,000.
That is a high reward. So now I'd like to talk about the outcome of the challenge, implementation. Can you share with us how past Innovations Challenge solutions have influenced PennDOT's policies or public safety campaigns?
Of course. Anytime we have some kind of Innovations Challenge or any other kind of contest, we will take those ideas and try to implement them into our programs as best as we possibly can. It obviously needs to be cost effective. It needs to be a practical idea that we can go ahead and put into our programs. So, for example, if someone were to come up with some kind of device or maybe an app or something like that, we would then look into the cost and what the outcome would be if we were to implement that into our program. Is it a doable solution? Is it an innovative idea that we feel that we can actually put into practice? So there are things that we will take into consideration and use them in our program as best as we possibly can.
So it all comes down to feasibility and costs, but it's an opportunity for students to contribute solutions to a large issue. So in the process of competing, what do you hope students will learn from this challenge or take away from it?
As with any kind of program that we run, we are always looking to get the word out in order for it to create an awareness campaign. So these are students from grades 9 through 12 who are possibly getting their driver's license or on the verge of getting their driver's license. So we're hoping that it does bring the awareness for this particular challenge to wear your seatbelt. Hopefully they'll pass that on to their younger siblings and their parents even if they're not wearing a seatbelt. And it'll bring awareness to how many fatalities a year that we do see. Right now, like I said, on average is 350 that we know of. I'm sure that there are many more.
Yes, and before we wrap up, is there anything else related to the challenge that you would like to add for our listeners?
The timeline is crucial. They have until January 31st in order to submit their innovative idea. So we do encourage all students, grades 9 through 12, it doesn't matter, you know, what subject that they're in, we encourage the students to talk to their teachers and form a team and to submit your ideas by January 31st to us. And then by February 14th is when we'll announce the district-wide winners. And then by about the third week of March is when the statewide winners will be announced.
Thank you for sharing this information on the competition. Listeners looking for more information can Google Penn.innovationschallenge. From the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, thank you Jessica Ruddy and Liz Fabry for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
In Liberty, I'm Nia Watson for Radio Catskill.
Yeah, thanks to Nia for that. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll learn more about the Artery Gallery, the cooperative of local artists in Milford with a diverse collection. This is Radio Catskill.
Last year, over 100,000 people died from drug overdoses driven by fentanyl, and the fastest growing group is under 19. Fentanyl is the number one cause of overdose in Sullivan County. Whether you're a parent or an educator, you can have the right conversation now to potentially save a kid's life. Protect kids from the dangers of fentanyl. More information and resources at naturalhigh.org. Paid for by Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster.
On the next Jazz Night in America, from gospel to TikTok to vocal big shot, hear the story of Samara Joy and a live performance with the trio at Dizzy's Club.
It must have been moonglow, way up in the blue.
I'm Christian McBride. Join me for Jazz Night in America, Sunday at 8, here on Radio Catskill.
Hi there, this is Brian, host of The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9. I'll be playing a mix of indie, alternative, college, rock, and pop, some new music, and some old classics. That's The Secret Show, Friday nights at 9, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Artery started in the summer of 1999 and is a gallery now located in the historic Forest Hall building in Milford, Pennsylvania. It's a cooperative owned and operated by successful and emerging artists and artisans in the tri-state area. Culture reporter Valerie Manzi spoke to Marie Liu, director of the Artery, about the background of the space, the historic Forest Hall building it's housed in, and an opening reception happening tomorrow.
Welcome, Marie, and welcome to Radio Chatskill.
Thank you very much. I have to say it's one of my favorite radio stations, so I'm very pleased to be here with you today.
Oh, good, good. Why don't we begin by telling the listeners about the Artery Gallery and the famous building it's in?
We have represented in our nearly 30 years of being open many artists throughout the region because it's a little bit of a unique format where it's a cooperative rather than privately owned. It's owned and operated by the artists who become members there. So over its significant history, it's pretty much included all artists who are in the region have come through there in one way or another. So we're pretty proud of it. There's about maybe 12 to 15 artists there at any given time. And I guess what makes it unique as a cooperative is that, well, first of all, it's a little easier to make it through tough times because the responsibility of the financial responsibility falls on many shoulders. So when the economy may be not doing so well, we can get through it. Another good, nice thing about the cooperative format is that it's very organic in that as new members come and members leave, they bring their personalities and their own individual styles to the gallery, and then they contribute to the feeling of the place. We represent artists who work in all different media are always there. Every month, two of the members move forward into the front of the gallery and have featured shows. So there's two people usually having a featured show each month. So the month of October into November will be me and my co-exhibitor, Lisa Smith Simpson. To tell you a little bit about Lisa, she lives in Sparta, New Jersey, and she does a lot of her landscape and imagery based on Sussex County. And I focus my attention on Pike County and the Pocono region, both the landscape and the history.
And the name of the show is The Language of Beauty, and you're having an opening reception on the 12th, that's this coming Saturday, from 6 to 9.
Wine and cheese reception. The public is invited to meet us and some of the other members of the gallery, and it's usually a pretty fun party. We love to meet art lovers, art collectors, but we also like to meet the other artists, and it's a nice atmosphere. It's friendly, and artists are welcome to come there and check it out.
And you're also in a very historic building.
Yeah, we're just thrilled to be there in the Forest Hall building. And it's a French Normandy style. It's a beautiful building right at the very heart of town at the only traffic light. That building was built by the Pinchots, the Pinchot family that emigrated from France in 1818. And they brought an interesting French flair to Milford, which before that was a very kind of dusty little, there would be the timber rafters, there would be the quarrymen, the lumberjacks. So it was said to be the early days of Milford, kind of jokingly was said that there was more bars than churches.
Okay, I remember that.
So when the Pinchots emigrated here from France, they brought their French flair, and they brought their wealth, and they brought their entrepreneurial savvy. And they really contributed so much to the town that we still enjoy today. And one of those contributions was the Forest Hall building.
Which is huge.
It's quite a large building, yes. And the original part of the building, which was a small part, was built in 1863. It was originally designed to be a post office by Calvert Vaux, famous architect and designer. And then in 1904, the building was greatly expanded, and it was designed by Richard Morris Hunt. And the intention of the expanded building was to be summer classes for Yale students of School of Forestry. So the students, the forestry students from Yale would come to Milford for the summer, and they would have their classroom work done in Forest Hall, and then they would have their practical studies of forestry out in the field up at Gray Towers. So Gray Towers was the built by James Pinchot, father of Gifford Pinchot, and it Gray Towers is open to the public, and it's a National Historic Site that is managed by the United States Forest Service. We all in town feel as though we have a part in sharing the legacy of Gifford Pinchot and the Pinchot family.
Well, it looks like you're doing a really good job of it. And can you give us a little more information about the Language of Beauty? Well, we know it begins on the 12th of October. And when does it conclude?
The show goes until November 4th.
Okay. And then you'll be having a new show after that.
Oh, that's right. Our new show, we always do it in November. I think this is our fourth annual. We host the Delaware Highlands Conservancy.
Uh-huh.
They hold an annual photo contest, and they receive photography from local photographers, both amateur and professional, and they pick the winners. They're all images of regional scenery, flora and fauna. We host their show of the winners. So there's about 20 pieces, and that always happens in November.
And listeners can get more information at arterygallerymilford.com.
Correct.
Well, thank you so much for sharing all of this wonderful historic information and the background of your wonderful cooperative gallery, and have a wonderful weekend.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks to Valerie Manzi for that report. We'll take a break, and when we come back, Thurman Barker with a rare performance. We'll learn more after this break. This is Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Artist Cottage Bed and Breakfast, a newly renovated farmhouse that sleeps four with full gourmet cook breakfast provided daily, located near the top of Hauk Mountain Road in the town of Walton. More information at greatwesterncatskills.com. Radio Catskill relies on dedicated listeners like you who are willing to take that next step and actually become a supporter. Do your part to keep public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Keep it free and available to everyone who needs it. Go to WJFFradio.org to make your donation now. That's WJFFradio.org.
Hi, this is Jeff, your host on Radio Catskills Electric Mountain, featuring the very best of global dance music. I play the best of dance music from back in the day to today, and every week I'll feature a guest DJ spinning a continuous set bringing their unique style. Come dance with us on Electric Mountain each and every Saturday night, 12 to 2, exclusively on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The Thurman Barker Quintet celebrates the music of Benny Golson and Art Blakely in a rare special performance tomorrow at Rafters Cafe and Bar in Calicoon. Thurman Barker, of course, is a celebrated drummer, percussionist who built his career on innovation. He's a professional musician, composer, and college professor, and friend of the station, and he joins us right now. Thurman, good morning.
Good morning, Tim. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, of course. Tell us more about this performance tomorrow at Rafters, celebrating the music of Benny Golson and Art Blakey.
Well, first of all, some of you heard my performance and over the summer during the Jazz Festival, and I presented the music of Art Blakey. Art Blakey is a drummer and very important musician and a successful band leader, and actually created an institution called Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. So tomorrow night was set aside for featuring Art Blakey. In lieu of that, since then, about a month ago, we the jazz community lost a distinguished composer and improviser by the name of Benny Golson. And Benny Golson was exceptional in two ways. He was from Philadelphia, PA, and started playing piano. And at 14 years old, switched over to tenor saxophone, and after high school, became a professional. And he created a group called the Jazz Tet. And later on, was a member of the Art Blakey and the Jazz Messenger. So I decided to include some of Benny Golson's music in the performance tomorrow. So that's what makes it one reason it's a rare performance. Music of Benny Golson and Art Blakey together, but also it is a rare tribute with this band.
Tell us about who you have.
I have Patience Higgins on tenor saxophone, who has been a collaborator with myself over the years, and we have James Zoller on trumpet. And when you're doing the music of hard bop, which a lot of the music stems out of that period, these two guys really are exceptional. And I'm sure they have been in and out of, they're part of the jazz scene in New York. And that also makes it very rare because they don't get up here. They were up here for the first time over the summer. So for those reasons, it's a special tribute to combine the music of Benny Golson and Art Blakey. On piano, we have Joe Trentina on piano, and one of WJFF finest on bass, Tony Marino, and myself on drums.
Yeah, for folks who may not know about the hard bop era, explain what that is. You know, Benny Golson was a founder of one of the leading groups of that era as well.
That's right, exactly, Tim. And hard bop became established after bebop. When modern jazz came into play in 1939 and the early 40s through the 40s, some of the musicians in that period were concerned about, well, you know, they were losing some of their audiences because the music had gotten advanced. Because of harmonies and rhythms, and so it had was a little difficult to understand, at least for the common ear. For jazz musicians, it was a breath of fresh air. It was a new language. So these musicians, like Benny Golson and Art Blakey, they were some of the early practitioners of this style. And the big difference between hard bop and bebop is, number one, the tempo is a little slower, and the rhythms were pronounced, okay? In bebop, listening to Dizzy Gillespie, Charlie Parker, and Max Roach and all those guys, the tempos were very fast. And that was just the way the music was. During the 40s, things were changing. Things were advancing. And the musicians got wind of this and their music, and they had discovered this language of harmonies. And so the music had gotten really complicated harmonically and rhythmically. So the big difference between bebop and hard bop, and hard bop became really popular into the music scene during the early 50s throughout, and you find a lot of musicians today still using that language of hard bop. So that's the main difference. And the main thing is tomorrow, if many of the folks in the community have time, we would be specifically focusing on some of that music and celebrating Benny Golson
Yeah, Betty Golson.
Blakely.
Yeah, and Betty Golson passed away just last month at 95. And
at 95 years old.
Yeah, and today, today is actually Art Blakey's birthday. And
that's
so,
right.
Celebrating both of those great performers. That's tomorrow at Rafters. It is in Calicoon with the Thurman Barker Quintet. Celebrating the music of Benny Golson and Art Blakey. Thurman, yeah. Thank you so much for joining us and letting us know about this special performance.
Always, Tim, to let everyone know that live jazz is best.
It's so true. And it's live jazz with you and your band also best, too. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Have a great day.
You too. Before we go, a couple of programming notes. Coming up next, actually, our election coverage continues. Everything you need to know about Pennsylvania's candidates running for attorney general, treasurer, and auditor general. It's Spotlight PA's Roe Office Panel, hosted by Stephen Caruso of Spotlight PA. That's coming up at 11, preempting On Point today as we continue our election coverage for you here on Radio Catskill. And tomorrow, the official kickoff of our fall fun drive is a fun one. It's Apple Pie Palooza for the third year in a row. We're gathering at Catskill Brewery for pie. Everything you ever wanted in an apple pie will be there. We have pies for sale donated from great bakeries in our area, including Be Kind Bakery in Honesdale, Beach Lake Bakery, Bethel Market Cafe, Delaware Valley Job Corps Culinary Arts Program. You heard from the students earlier this hour. Foster Supply Hospitality, the Jeff Bake Shop, Proper to Go with some pies from Woodlock, Roger That Bakery in Calicoon, and the SUNY Sullivan Culinary Arts Program. All donating pies for sale tomorrow at Catskill Brewery. Take a pie home, and you can also taste some of the pies in the Apple Pie Baking Competition. We'll have them available by slice as well. All proceeds benefit the station as we kick off our fall fun drive tomorrow, Catskill Brewery in Livingston Manor at 3. That's all for this edition of Radio Catskill. Thanks so much, and we'll see you tomorrow for some pie. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Radio Catskill supporters include the Sterling Business and Technology Park, located at Exit 17 on Interstate 84 in Northeast Pennsylvania, offering opportunities to locate or expand businesses on property zoned for manufacturing and other uses. More information at sterlingbusinesspark.com. And listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
Hi, Angela Page from Folk Plus. On the Folk Plus shows that I create, they are lyrically driven and based on a theme. I choose the songs with music that moves my heart and lyrics that engage our minds. Take an intelligent, intimate journey with today's singer-songwriters and join me on Folk Plus, Sundays at 4.
Last night I saw the Horse King when he was in his prime.
Music from a musician's perspective. I'm Kathy Geary, and on Now and Then, we explore the artistry of the singer-songwriter. Now and Then, Saturday afternoons at 3 on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's weather, mostly sunny, milder, a nice afternoon to be outside, high 62. Tonight, mainly clear, a low of 50. We can expect some rainy weather late tomorrow night through Monday morning. Tomorrow, breezy during the day, high 62, then turning cloudy with rain later on, a low near 40. Sunday, cooler with rain and drizzle, a 90% chance of showers, high only 51. Sunday night's low is 47, and Monday breezy, a few morning showers, that temperature sticking around 51, and then dropping to 36 Monday night. Coming up at 11, in place of On Point, it's more election coverage. Everything you need to know about Pennsylvania's candidates running for Attorney General, Treasurer, and Auditor General, Spotlight PA's Roe Office Panel, next.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated,
presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org.
This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Made possible by listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org. Listen on air, live streaming at WJFFRadio.org, or ask your smart speaker to play Radio Catskill.